वैष्णवेभ्यश्च कृतेभ्यः पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, we completed reading of the commentaries to texts 9 to 12 yesterday. So we are resuming a reading of Prabhupada's commentary. 2.13 Tehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara तथा देहांतर प्राप्तिर धीरस्तत्र न मुह्यति। As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Since every living entity is an individual soul, each is changing his body every moment, manifesting sometimes as a child, sometimes as a youth, and sometimes as an old man. Yet the same spirit soul is there and does not undergo any change. This individual soul finally changes the body at death and transmigrates to another body. And since it is sure to have another body in the next birth, either material or spiritual, there was no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. So the idea is, souls do not change, the bodies do change. The soul's nature is sthira, to be steady, never changes. The body's nature is never to be sthira, asthira. It always changes. So Prabhupada is pointing out that the body is going to change. Change means it's going to go through one position after another. It's not going to be just one. You'll not find someone who's just a child, just a youth. One has to change. One has to change. The bodies are like that. They're designed like that. So the idea is, just as a body is anyway going to change from childhood to boyhood, to from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly, after old age, the body is going to die and the soul will be put into another body. So, the spirit soul is not changed. You're not going to have any difference in the personality, in the spiritual personality. So, there was no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. So Krishna's point is, Bhishma is not going to die. Drona is not going to die. In reality, they're not going to die. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. But just as when a soul changes his body from childhood to youthhood, at youth, the senses are very strong. Rejuvenation. The senses are very strong. The body is very strong, full of energy. Nobody cries when somebody becomes a youth. Nobody cries, "Oh, my son became a youth. Unfortunately, he became a youth. Now he can walk, he can run." Nobody cries because of that. So similarly, he's saying that Bhishma and Drona, they're going to die, they're going to get new bodies. They're going to get new bodies, so their energy will be rejuvenated. So why should you lament? You should be happy that they're going to get new bodies, new facility. Such changes of body account for varieties of enjoyment or suffering according to one's work in life. So this change of body, the next body that you get, that explains the variety of enjoyment or suffering that exists in the universe. Corresponding to my work in this life, corresponding to my pious and impious activities in this life, I get another life, next life, which means I get another body. It is important to note that the souls are unchanging. It's only the bodies which change. So Bhishma and Drona, being noble souls, were surely going to have spiritual bodies in the next life, or at least life in heavenly bodies for superior enjoyment of material existence. So Bhishma and Drona, at least they'll get liberated. Okay, or even if they don't get liberated, if you were to say that they're just heavenly beings, celestial beings, then at least they're going to get heavenly bodies. In any case, even if they get heavenly bodies, they're going to enjoy. So in either case, there was no cause of lamentation. In either case, whether they're going to get liberated, they get a spiritual body, then there's no cause for lamentation. Or if they are going to get a heavenly body, there's no cause for lamentation. This is what Krishna's indicating. This is Krishna's point. Then in the next paragraph, Prabhupada takes one word which appears in the text. Dhiras tatrana mukhyati. Dhiraha, the sober. A sober person. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So who is a sober person? Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul and nature, both material and spiritual, is called a dhira, or a most sober man. Such a man is never deluded by the change of bodies. So the dhira, he is not deluded by the change of bodies. He's not affected by people dying. He's not affected by people being born. A sober person is not affected. He's not deluded by the change of bodies. So dhira is one who understands the individual soul, the super soul, material nature and spiritual nature. Now the Mayavadis have their own pet theories. Here are some theories. The Mayavadi theory of oneness of the spirit soul cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as a fragmental portion. This is the famous Parichinnavada. It's another theory called Pratibimbavada. So there are some ideas. See, Mayavad, the central point of Shankarite Mayavad is there is one soul. There is one impersonal Brahman. Now how did that one impersonal Brahman become all this, if there is only one impersonal Brahman? Then how did we get this plurality of individual souls? I am having a different experience from you, different experience from him. So there are different ways of trying to explain that. Here is one, Parichinnavada. That impersonal Brahman got cut up. It got cut. Like you cut a birthday cake. It got cut into many jivas. That's one idea. Another idea is Pratibimbavada. It's reflected. So many reflections of that impersonal Brahman. Now for all this, they have apparent evidence from the Vedas, from the Upanishads. They'll give their quotations also. Oh, this is stated in the Upanishads. So they'll give some so-called evidence. But their ideas cannot be entertained. The Mayavadi theory of oneness of the spirit soul cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as a fragmental portion. You cannot cut spirit into multiple portions because it is not fit for that. It is spiritual. Cannot be cut. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the supreme cleavable or changeable against the principle of the Supreme Soul's being unchangeable. The Upanishads very clearly point out that the Supreme Being, Brahman, is not changeable. It cannot be transformed. It is untransformed. Kutastha, fixed. It cannot be cut. The moment you say it is cut, then you are transforming it. So it cannot be transformed. It cannot be cut. Now you may say that the Bhagavad Gita also says that the Lord has parts. He has parts, amshes. So Prabhupada, he points out that yes, but those parts are eternal. As confirmed in the Gita, the fragmental portions of the Supreme exist eternally, sanatana, and are called kshara. That is, they have a tendency to fall down into material nature. These fragmental portions are eternally so, and even after liberation, the individual soul remains the same, fragmental. But once liberated, he lives an eternal life in bliss and knowledge with the personality of Godhead. Again, we have to remember that the text says very clearly that the fragmental portions of the Lord are eternal. If you look at chapter 15, text 7, chapter 15, text 7. Mamaivamsho jivaloke jivabhutas sanatanah manashasthani indriyani prakritisthani karshati mama eva amshaha. Mama, my, eva, certainly, amshaha, fragmental particle, jivaloke, in the world of conditional life, jivabhuta, the conditioned living entity, sanatanah, eternal. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Literally, the living entity in this conditioned world is my eternal amsha, is my eternal part. It's my eternal part. It's not a temporary part. It's eternal part. And if you look at, we saw this yesterday, chapter 14, text 2. If you look at chapter 14, text 2, which talks about the status of liberation. Idam jnanam upashritya mama sadharmyam agata sarge pinopajayante phalayena vyathanti cha. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own, thus established. One is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. Notice that this is a description of the highest perfection. The highest perfection is one is not born at the time of creation in this material world. One is not disturbed at the time of dissolution of this material world. And at that position, one attains to a transcendental nature like Krishna's. Like Krishna's nature. One can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Mama sadharmyam agata. They attain my nature. They don't become me. They attain my nature. They means many living entities. They attain my nature. They are not disturbed. They are not born. They are not born, they are not disturbed, means they exist in his nature. And because he's saying they, it means many living entities are existing in his nature. That means what? That means in the liberated status, there are many individual souls. If there were to be only one soul, then he would have said, the soul becomes me. And he can't even say I or we, he has to say it. It is not born at the time of creation. It is not disturbed at the time of annihilation. He's not speaking like that. So he does not support this. ekatmavada, the idea that there is only one soul. Rather, he is talking of bahuatmavada, many atmas. As confirmed in the Gita, the fragmental portions of the Supreme exist eternally. Sanatana are called Kshara. Now, the living entities are called Kshara in the 15th chapter. Especially as translated by Vishnu Chakravarti. We will see this when we come to this. 15.16, he's talking of Kshara. Kshara Sarvani Bhutani. And Vishnu Chakravarti has taken this translation that Kshara refers to the living entities. Kshara means that which can fall from its nature. Akshara refers to the Supreme Being, He who does not fall from His nature. The Supreme Lord does not have the ability to fall from His nature because He is infallible. But the living entities are fallible. We will see that when we come to Vishnu Chakravarti's translation. Then Prabhupada brings up the second theory, the Pratibimbavada. The Pratibimbavada is another attempt by some Advaitins to make sense of this world and the plurality of the individual souls in this world. So they take some statement from the Shruti and they interpret it to mean that the Lord has reflected Himself into many. And the impersonal, not really the Lord, the impersonal Brahman has reflected into many. And that is how we get. So we are all the reflected suns. There is one sun. And because you kept so many pots of water, and there are so many reflected suns, reflection suns. So if you remove the water, all the reflection suns go away. But in reality, there are no reflection suns. It's only a reflection. So that is one concept they have. Prabhupada writes, the theory of reflection can be applied to the super soul, who is present in each and every individual body and is known as the Paramatma. He is different from the individual living entity. Now this theory is also wrong, because the living entities have been described to be eternal. And that they exist in the liberated status also. So this interpretation of the example of the sun is wrong. See, the idea is, from chapter 14 I pointed out, that even in the liberated status there are many living entities. That means the living entities are eternal, they are actually there, they are real, they are not temporary, you cannot dissolve them. Like this reflected sun, reflection suns. If you take away the water, they disappear. So you can make them disappear. But you cannot make the living entities disappear, because living entities can exist even in the status of highest liberation. So therefore, this theory of reflection cannot be applied to the Jivatmas. It can only be made to apply to Paramatma. How? The idea is, you have one Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. He reflects Himself in unlimited Paramatmas. Along with the Jivatma, the Paramatma is also present. So when the living entity attains liberation, that type of Paramatma doesn't exist in the liberated platform. In this world, what does the Paramatma do? Upadrashta Anumanta. He witnesses all the material activities and spiritual activities we are doing. And he sanctions. Okay, you can do this, you cannot do that. And he's the one giving you one material body after another. Ishura sarvabhutanam hridyeshe arjuna tishtati ramayan sarvabhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. So Paramatma is the one doing all this work. There is no Paramatma in the spiritual world giving you one body after another. There is no Paramatma who is witnessing
hey, you're doing this material activity, I'll punish you like this. I will reward you like that. There, Bhagavan himself is there. And you're enjoying pastimes of love of God. So the Paramatma Fiji disappears. This type of Paramatma disappears. Therefore, the example is given that there's one Bhagavan, he has reflected himself into innumerable Paramatmas with the living entities. And that example is given, there's one sun, there are so many pots of water. When the water is taken away, the reflections disappear. Water taken away means that you get liberated. Your subtle body dissolves. So then you get liberated. When you get liberated, then there's no reflected sun. So the example that is coming from the Veda is correct, provided you understand it correctly. When we attain the spiritual world, we do not have a Paramatma who is helping us reincarnate and giving us appropriate bodies and so on. So that type of Paramatma does not exist. Because he is present in his original form of Bhagavan. So therefore, the theory of reflection is applied there. It cannot be applied to the living entity. He is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars also. The stars can be compared to the living entities and the sun or the moon to the Supreme Lord. Apart from that, the idea is that if you take the sometimes the example of the moon is also given. The moon is reflected. So suppose you take the moon. Now the moon is there along with the stars. The stars also can be seen here. The stars also you'll see in the reflection, no? So that means the living entities are also reflected. Originally the idea is all the living entities are existing on the spiritual plane. But when we take on material bodies, we are projected onto this plane. And here we appear to have so many different bodies in course of time. In course of time. Like sometime I am a demigod, sometimes I am a bird, sometimes I am a worm, sometimes I am a beast. So I have so many bodies. And I have so many personalities, all temporary. But in the spiritual world, I have only one Swarup. Here I appear to have so many material Swarups. Like there was one king, Chitraketu. Chitraketu did not have a son. Then with the blessings of Narad Muni and Angira Muni, he was blessed to have a son. So when the son was born, the sages had told him that this son will be the cause of your delight and your lamentation. This appears in the 6th canto of the Bhagavata. This incident is narrated there. So then that son was born. The king had so many co-wives. He had his wife and so many other wives also. And through all these wives, he never had a child. He only had a child through this particular woman, whoever gave birth to the child. The child's name was Harshashoka, the one who gives happiness and distress. So he spent a lot of time with this woman who gave him this nice child. The other ladies became so envious of her. So one day they called that child and poisoned that child. So that child died. So when the child died, Chitraketu lamented like a madman. He and his wife both lamented like a madman. They were just simply talking like an insane creature. Simply saying, oh, so many things I've seen. So at that time, Narada Muni and Angira Muni, they arrived. And they were trying to make him understand that, look, it's all illusion. Why are you bothered about it? It's all temporary. We keep reincarnating according to our karma. So what is there? You know, according to your karma, you're not supposed to have a child. So you're not having a child now. That's all. Why are you so bothered about it? You know, you should get liberated. So many things you're telling, but he's not capable of understanding. He's terrified. Because he's the only son. If he doesn't have a son, who will he transfer his kingdom to? So he's paranoid. So then the sages, they bless that soul which was in that child's body. And they order that soul to come back into this body and enlighten the king. So that soul entered back into that child's body. So then the sages say, sir, here's your father and mother, why are you leaving them and going? So then the child said, a famous statement, that which father, which mother? I've had millions of fathers and mothers. Which father and mother are you talking about? I've had so many personalities. In my most recent birth, I was their child. But I, in reality, had so many personalities, so many families, so many, you know, everywhere I was different. So when the soul comes to the material platform, then he appears to have so many personalities in course of time. You can compare that to some sort of reflection. You can compare it to some sort of reflection. Just like if you have one sun or one moon or one star, so many reflection stars are coming in reflections. Similarly, one soul which has only one swarup, one personality, it appears to have multiple swarups here. So you can interpret that theory of reflection to make it more consistent with the entire body of the Vedas, to refer to the Supreme Lord. And you can take the moon, you can take the stars to refer to the living entities. The individual fragmental spirit soul is represented by Arjuna. And the Supreme Soul is the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna. They are not on the same level, as it will be apparent in the beginning of the fourth chapter. If Arjuna is on the same level with Krishna, and Krishna is not superior to Arjuna, then their relationship of instructor and instructed becomes meaningless. If both of them are deluded by the illusory energy Maya, then there is no need of one being the instructed and the other the instructed. There is no need of one being the instructor and the other the instructed. Such instruction would be useless, because in the clutches of Maya, no one can be an authoritative instructor. Under the circumstances, it is admitted that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord, superior in position to the living entity Arjuna, who is a forgetful soul deluded by Maya. So this has to be understood, that there is a relationship between the Lord and the living entities. The Supreme Lord is superior, eternally, constitutionally superior to the living entities. Any questions? Otherwise, we're moving on to 14. Yes.
He said that in spiritual world, the Kharam, Kharam has no Paramatma. But here, so many Atma is living there.
Where?
At the Kharam, individual person, after liberation.
Now, Kharam is the nature of the soul itself, whether it is here or there, wherever. Kharam means that they are capable of being here or there.
They are asking if we combine, there's so many Atmas there.
What do you mean combine? How can you combine so many Atmas? Each Atma is a different person. Each Atma is a distinct person. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Person. All the living entities put together cannot equal Krishna. Krishna is more than all living entities put together. Each one is an individual person. Individual person. Okay, 14. Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukadukhada agamapayino nitya stamstitikshasva bharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of the happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, or sayan of Bharata. Sayan means descendant. Descendant of Bharata. And one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. In the proper discharge of duty, one has to learn to tolerate non-permanent appearances and disappearances of happiness and distress. See, the idea is this. While carrying out our spiritual or material duties, we should not allow ourselves to be distracted by material pleasures or material displeasures. That is the point. In the proper discharge of duty, when we are trying to carry out our duties, we have to tolerate the temporary happinesses and distresses that keep coming. One day we may find it happy to do our duty. Another day we may find it unhappy to do our duty. One day when we go to do our service, the people around us may help us, they may cooperate with us. Another day, they may not cooperate with us. So all this headache one has to accept. The headache of happiness, the headache of unhappiness. Both are headaches. Because they are material. They are not spiritual. Whereas when we... Okay, we will see this. According to Vedic injunction, one has to take his bath early in the morning, even during the month of Magh, January, February. It is very cold at that time. But in spite of that, a man who abides by religious principles does not hesitate to take his bath. Because the rule is one must take a bath early in the morning. Whether that early in the morning is giving you happiness or early in the morning is giving you distress. The rule is one must take his bath early in the morning. Similarly, a woman does not hesitate to cook in the kitchen in the months of May and June, the hottest part of the summer season. Similarly, for a religious woman, there is an injunction that she should cook for her husband, her in-laws, for the children. The injunction is she should cook. Should cook whether it is winter or summer or spring or autumn. Should cook. One has to execute his duty in spite of climatic inconveniences. This is the point. One has to execute his duty in spite of climatic inconveniences. Sometimes the climate may be convenient. Sometimes the climate may be inconvenient. But despite that, we should carry out our duties. The duties prescribed by the Vedas. Similarly, that was an example. Similarly, to fight is the religious principle of the Kshatriyas. Similarly, for a Kshatriya, his Swadharma is to fight for Dharma. And although one has to fight with some friend or relative, one should not deviate from his prescribed duty. So sometimes, you know, it happens due to our karma or by the arrangement of the Lord or both, that we have to engage in our Swadharma with our own friends and relatives as our opponents. As Arjuna has put in, look at the situation where Arjuna is put in. So one has to do it. That's all. Just as you would when you have to take bath early in the morning. Or if you have to cook. Even in summer. So the idea is one has to follow the prescribed rules and regulations of religious principles in order to rise up to the platform of knowledge. Because by knowledge and devotion only can one liberate himself from the clutches of maya or illusion. So one has to follow the rules and regulations of Vedic religious principles. Because if we do it properly, if we carry out the religious principles in the mode of goodness, along with the increasing bhakti yoga, then we rise up to the platform of knowledge. That means we rise up to the platform, to the Brahmanical plane, to the plane of realization. Because by knowledge and devotion only can one liberate himself from the clutches of maya. So with devotion, then one can get out of delusion. One needs to come to the platform of knowledge and devotion. The two different names of address given to Arjuna are also significant. Look at this. Krishna is addressing Arjuna as Kaunteya and Bharata. Kaunteya means son of Kunti. Bharata means the descendant of Bharat Maharaj. He is the son of Pandu, who is a descendant of Bharat. The two different names of address given to Arjuna are also significant. To address him as Kaunteya signifies his great blood relations from his mother's side. And to address him as Bharata signifies his greatness from his father's side. From both sides, he is supposed to have a great heritage. A great heritage brings responsibility in the matter of proper discharge of duties. Therefore, he cannot avoid fighting. This is a matter which is given a lot of attention in Vedic culture. Suppose you belong to a certain disciplic line, or you belong to a certain community, a certain vamsha, dynasty, and that Vamsha is known for producing very religious heroes. So then since childhood, they keep telling you, look, you belong to this dynasty, you should perform the way our forefathers have performed. Don't become a disgrace to your dynasty. So when people, in fact, when they take initiation into a Vaishnava line also, then they join that Vamsha, that dynasty of spiritual masters. So they always are made to think, look, your predecessor acharyas, they have done like this, you should also do like them. They will not allow you to think, I was a fool sitting in the material world, I did so many crazy things, now also I can do crazy things. No, they will tell you, you take an initiation, you join this Vamsha. So look in this Vamsha, look what your guru, how much hard work is doing. Look how much hard work Prabhupada is doing. Look how much Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati suffered. How much Gaur Kishore was renounced. Bhakti Vinod, how responsible he was. Jagannath Das Babaji, 120 years old, he was coming to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. Look at Baladev Vidya Bhushan, explaining the Shastras. Look at Vishnu Chakravarti, with so many diseases, he was still preaching about Radha Krishna and pure devotional service. Look at Narottam Shyamananda Srinivas. Look at Jiva Goswami. Look at Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami. This is how they give. The idea is they make us join one lineage of ideal people. That makes it easy for us to identify, because all of us need some self-image, some identity. We all need some identity. If I identify myself as some South Indian, then whenever I do some crazy thing, I will say, all South Indians do crazy things, so I am also doing crazy things. We think like that. But the identity is given, no, now you have a new identity. That is why when they take Diksha, they even change the name. Because name is one thing which gives you identity. So when your name is different, then the person who gives you the name, you identify with that person. Then you identify with the entire lineage. This is how we do things. That is the whole idea. We do like this. We means who? Means all the acharyas in my lineage. We do like this. It's like Arjuna. No? He always identifies himself as Bharata. All the people in the Bharat dynasty, they do like this. No king in the Bharat dynasty has ever abandoned a woman. Or like Ramachandra. I am coming in the Ikshvaku dynasty. I have to uphold the religious principles and the glory of the Ikshvaku dynasty. Surya Vamsha. In our dynasty, anyone who surrenders to us will be given full protection. Every glorious king has maintained that standard. I will also maintain that standard. The same way, when you take initiation in a parampara, because you are looking at it from the perspective of your heritage, this is your identity. So you don't think in terms of this world. You don't see 90% of these people are doing this. You don't even think about these people. You think about your lineage. You think about your dynasty. You always calculate in terms of dynasty. You don't see 95% of ISKCON is like this. Oh, all the brahmacharis are like that. All the grihasthas are like that. Nobody thinks like that. They always think, no, me, my guru, his guru, his guru, his guru, his guru. They identify with something else like this. They don't identify with this community, contemporary community. It's a different way of thinking. So Krishna knows that Arjuna, being a noble person, he also thinks like that. And therefore Krishna is telling, Kaunteya, Bharata, look, all the people from your mother's side and father's side, they have tolerated all forms of material distress. They have done their swadharma. Are you going to be a disgrace? Are you going to run away from this battle? Nobody has done this in your mother's side. Nobody has done this from your father's side. Like they all tolerated and they stuck to Vedic Dharma, you should also tolerate and stick to Vedic Dharma. That is the point. 15. Yam hina vyatayantyete purusham purusharshabha samadukha sukham dhiram somritatvaya kalpate. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. Anyone who is steady in his determination for the advanced stage of self-realization and can equally tolerate the onslaughts of distress and happiness, is certainly a person eligible for liberation. Notice that here distress is considered an onslaught. Happiness is also considered an onslaught. Both of them are always trying to disturb us. They are taking us away. They are taking us away from our goal. It's like a man who wants to become rich. Okay, I'll give you another example. Just like a football champion. He's gathering his team. And for these teams, some of these teams, they want to ensure that you perform well. They want to ensure that you perform well. So let us say they're preparing for some FIFA, some World Cup. So they're really preparing. They've come on to the semi-finals. And now they're moving on to the finals. So they're moving up, up, up. So in the meanwhile, now there are some principles which some football teams adhere to. For instance, when they're preparing for some important tournament, the players don't have sex. They don't release their semen because it's not good. There are some teams like this. So they're trying to, because they have some goal in mind, that goal should be got. So suppose I'm a member in such a team. Whether my girlfriend ditches me or I get a new beautiful girlfriend, no, both I don't want now, because I want that goal. Goal is to participate in the team, and the team should come number one. So for that sake, I'll avoid all kinds of conjugal relationships. Whether it is pleasant or displeasant, unpleasant. Even in the material world, people are like rich people who want to become very rich. They will avoid any distraction. Pleasing distraction, displeasing distraction. They don't want anyone to distract them from the goal. So similarly, anyone who wants to attain the platform of liberation or higher, higher than liberation is to attain pure love of Krishna. We have to learn to tolerate material distress and material happiness. Both of them are great distractions. They both are some kind of maya. Distress is also maya. Happiness is maya, distress is also maya. So we want to ensure that we are not overwhelmed by either of them. This is a very, very important principle. In Bhakti Yoga, this is the number one point actually. For instance, Rupa Goswami has, I'll show you as a sample. Rupa Goswami has summarized, Rupa Goswami is Lord Chaitanya's chief disciple. And Rupa Goswami has written so many books. He is considered the leader of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He has summarized all of his teachings in one small little booklet called Upadeshamrita, which Prabhupada expounded in the form of the Nectar of Instruction. And the very first instruction that he gives there, very first instruction, is you should control the six urges. Vacho Vegam, you should control the urge of speech. Manasaha, the urge of the mind. Krodha Vegam, the urge of anger. Jihva Vegam, the urge of the tongue to speak and eat. Udropastha Vegam, the urge of the stomach, the belly. The urge of the genitals. Etan Vegan Yo Vishaheta Dhira Sarvam Apimam Prithvim Chasishyat. A personality should first of all control these six urges. Then he is qualified to instruct and initiate the whole world. This is the first instruction. And the acharyas, they explain, why is Rupa Goswami talking of this? He is giving a booklet on summarizing his own teachings on Krishna consciousness. Why is he talking about this? And the acharyas explain, because if you are under the control of these urges, it is not possible to steadily progress in Krishna consciousness. We cannot allow ourselves to be distracted by all these material emotions. Happiness, distress, whatever it may be. We cannot allow ourselves to be disturbed. That is why Prabhupada is saying, anyone who is steady in his determination for the advanced stage of spiritual realization and can equally tolerate the onslaughts of distress and happiness, is certainly a person eligible for liberation. in the Varnashrama institution, the fourth stage of life, namely the renounced order, sannyas, is a painstaking situation. But one who is serious about making his life perfect surely adopts the sannyas order of life in spite of all difficulties. The difficulties usually arise from having to sever family relationships to give up the connection of wife and children. But anyone who is able to tolerate such difficulties surely his path to spiritual realization is complete. But if anyone is able to tolerate such difficulties, surely his path to spiritual realization is complete. That is an example. Similarly, in Arjuna's discharge of duties as a Kshatriya, he is advised to persevere even if it is difficult to fight with his family members or similarly beloved persons. Just as to take sannyas is very painful because you are going against the current of emotions that you have for your family members. Similarly, to be a Kshatriya means that sometimes you will have to fight against even your family members. That also goes against the current of love and affection for your family members. So just as one understands that sannyas leads to liberation, if done properly, similarly the duty of a Kshatriya also leads to liberation, if done properly. That is the point. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas at the age of 24, and his dependents, young wife, 16-year-old Vishnupriya Devi, as well as old mother, Shachi Devi, had no one else to look after them. Yet for a higher cause he took sannyas and was steady in the discharge of higher duties. That is the way of achieving liberation from material bondage. So Lord Chaitanya demonstrated this is the way. He takes sannyas and he'll be steady in the discharge of higher duties. He was steady. He demonstrated a steady behavior of a sannyasi until his winding up of his pastimes in Tota Gopinath. Until that time, he was very, very steady. Ideal sannyasi. When he was a grihastha, he was an ideal grihastha. When he was a sannyasi, he was an ideal sannyasi. Bhaktivinoda says, grihastha should follow Lord Chaitanya as a grihastha. And the renunciants, they should emulate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They should follow Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's standards, the standards that Lord Chaitanya demonstrated as a sannyasi. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to bring out that point. That is the way of achieving liberation from material bondage. So if we want to be liberated from the clutches of Maya, we have to accept this principle. That I have to move ahead. I have to move ahead. I should not be distracted by something pleasurable or something unpleasant. These are all tiny distractions. Any questions? Otherwise, I'm moving on to text 16, which is a very important verse for different reasons. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate satah. Ubhayor api drishtontas vanayos tattva darshibhi. Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance. And that of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. There is no endurance of the changing body. Endurance means permanence. Permanence. That's called endurance. There's nothing permanent about any of the states assumed by the changing body. There is no endurance of the changing body. That the body is changing every moment by the actions and reactions of the different cells is admitted by modern medical science. And thus, growth and old age are taking place in the body. But the spirit soul exists permanently, remaining the same despite all changes of the body and the mind. That is the difference between matter and spirit. So matter is eternally transforming. And spirit never transforms. It is the same. The constitutional nature of the soul is, it does not keep on changing. The constitutional nature of the body is, it always changes. my son is a small boy now. After 10-15 years, that small boy will disappear. There will be some other big man. But if I say I still want that small baby to lie on my lap, that small boy is not going to come. He's gone. The small boy is dead. Instead, there is some big man with the same name, same identity, but he's somebody else. Because the body keeps changing. But because the soul is the same, the self-identity is the same. It is like us. Imagine we had a car, and the car has to go on changing every day. That type of a car. So when I bought it, it was an ambassador. And after 5 years, it becomes something else. Like some Tata Sumo or something. Then it goes on changing. So it is like that. The body goes on changing. That is the difference between matter and spirit. By nature, the body is ever changing and the soul is eternal. This conclusion is established by all classes of seers of the truth, both impersonalist and the personalist. The impersonalists and the personalists admit that the body and soul are categorically different. In the Vishnu Purana, it is stated that Vishnu and his abodes all have self-illuminated spiritual existence. Jyotimshi Vishnur Bhuvanani Vishnu. We will understand then the meaning of the statement. Why Prabhupada brings up this? We will understand this when we look at Baladeva Vidya Bhushan's commentary. The words existent and non-existent refer only to spirit and matter. The idea is that which is existing is called spirit. That which is non-existing is called matter. But this is only a way of talking. It does not mean that matter actually doesn't exist. The words existent means, when we say the word existent refers only to spirit, it means the word existent refers only to that which is permanently existing. The word non-existent refers only to matter. That means the word non-existent refers to that which is not permanently existing. Everything is calculated from the vantage point of permanence. From the point of view of eternity, only spirit soul is existing because it is unchanging. From the point of view of eternity, anything which is material, it is transforming its shape all the time. It's ever transforming, so therefore it is said to be non-existent. So it is very, very important. This way of this language is used throughout the higher portions of the Vedas, the Vedanta literature, including the Srimad Bhagavatam, uses this expression. It does not exist. It does not exist. It's an illusion. It is an illusion. Why do they say it's an illusion? Because it's transforming. You will not get it. It's gone. It's going to go away. It's going to go away. Just like, for instance, the man who says, I want a young, beautiful woman all the time. You don't get one young, beautiful woman all the time. Because that young, beautiful woman is going to grow old. So how are you going to have her and have her young all the time? You have to make him understand that he wants something which does not exist. He wants something which does not exist. In his mind, he has the idea that he wants a young, beautiful woman all the time. That does not exist. It's a shashashringa. It is the horn of a rabbit. Does not exist. It simply does not exist. So similarly, we should understand that that which is spiritual, that is existent. Means it is permanently existing. So this concept is reflected throughout Vedic literature in various ways. In various ways. This is repeatedly brought up. Repeatedly brought up. Because this is the only way, not the only way, this is one of the most important ways we can understand that we should not hanker for pleasure through matter. We should hanker for pleasure through spirit. Because what we are looking for does not exist within the transformations of material nature. It is like going to catch a wave in an ocean. You can catch a ball, because a ball is an entity. You can catch a stone. You can catch a flower. How can you catch a wave? A wave is not a thing. It is a state assumed by water. It is not a thing. It is an avastha. It is not a dravya. In Sanskrit philosophical literature, there is a distinction between avastha and dravya. Dravya means an item, like a ball. It's an item. It's an entity. Even water is an item. But a wave, I want to catch that wave. I want to embrace that wave. A wave is not a dravya, it's not a thing. It's not a thing. Similarly, most of the things that we are desiring for are all avasthas actually. Like for this standard example, a woman wants to marry some young man. What is this young man? What is this young man? It is an avastha. It is an avastha. Because nobody is an actual young man. It is a state assumed by a body. Even the body is an avastha. Because at a certain point the body will die. So just like you can catch a ball but you cannot catch a wave. Because a wave is not a thing. You can catch water but you cannot catch a wave. Similarly, you can catch prakriti, material nature, but you cannot catch any of its shapes, any of its configurations, because they are avasthas. So the sense objects that we are contemplating of, like a child, a man, young man, young woman, many different things, like even wealthy, these are all avasthas. And in order to make us understand that we should not be attracted to that which does not actually exist, they use this language, it does not exist, you see. Of the non-existent, the material body, of the eternal, the soul. The words existent and non-existent refer only to spirit and matter. Spirit exists, matter does not exist. This language is repeatedly used. Throughout the Bhagavatam also you will find. This language is used. Matter is illusion, it does not exist. Spirit is reality, it exists. It doesn't mean matter is actually an illusion. It exists, matter exists, but it exists like a video game. Like a video game. Like what is a video game? It is illusory. Suppose I win $20,000 inside a video game. What can I do with that $20,000 outside the video game? Inside the video game, I can buy ice cream, I can become a rich man, I can get all that. Inside the video game. But outside the video game, somebody was showing me, 3-4 years back, one of these kids was showing me a video game where you're driving a motorcycle. It's a motorcycle race. So riding. You can choose a character. So many characters you can choose. So you choose one character and you're riding. And let us say this personality was demonstrating that he won the game. So when he won the game, as his award, some girl came and sat behind him and they rode off somewhere. Then he demonstrated what happens when you lose. So he's driving and he lost. So when he lost, some people came with bottles and hit them on his head and broke the bottles. So both of this is happening inside the video game. In reality, my head, anything is happening to my head when I lose the game? No. In reality, when I win, is there some girl coming and sitting on my bike and I'm riding away? No. Both are happening inside. But if I get disturbed, I got beaten by these fellows, and that other guy, that girl came and sat on this other guy's motorbike and went away, I saw. And you start lamenting. Then people will say, that is illusory. False. It is false. It is false. Why are you lamenting about that which is an illusion? It is false. Even now people will speak like that. It doesn't mean that the video game is false. The video game is really presented. It's not like PC Sarkar, some magician came and created a bogus thing. The video game, you can buy it. You can go to a shop, you can pay money, you can buy it. They give it in a CD or in a DVD. You can download it off the internet. You can play it. It's a real video game. It's a real video game. But I am taking it too seriously. So when I take it too seriously, in order to make me understand, it is not in line with my self-interest. And therefore, this expression is used. It is false. It does not exist. It is false. Similarly, Krishna wants to point out, even though the material world is real, if I am acting with this, if I am dealing with this material world and taking it so seriously in a way that is against my self-interest, then Krishna, he points out, it is false. So Bhagavad Gita begins with this platform. It begins with this teaching. It stands on this platform of, look, we are going to talk spirituality. And from the perspective of attaining something spiritual, everything that you are getting here is practically illusory, non-existent. Therefore, right at the beginning he says, he refers to the material body as non-existing, refers to the soul as existing. But you should understand that Mayavadis say non-existing means really non-existing. We don't accept the Mayavadi interpretation. We say that no, it is really there, but you are mistaking it. You are taking it too seriously. And therefore this language is used. This is the beginning of the instruction by the Lord to the living entities who are bewildered by the influence of ignorance. Removal of ignorance involves the re-establishment of the eternal relationship between the worshipper and the worshipable, and the consequent understanding of the difference between the part and parcel living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can understand the nature of the Supreme by thorough study of oneself. The difference between oneself and the Supreme being understood as the relationship between the part and the whole. I brought out this point yesterday, that if you want to understand the relationship between A and B, you should know the nature of A and you should know the nature of B. You should know, because A and B are correlates, they are related to each other. So you should know the nature of both. So one can understand the nature of the Supreme by thorough study of oneself. The difference between oneself and the Supreme being understood as a relationship between the part and the whole. The living entity is the Amsha. The Supreme Lord is the Amshi, the whole. Just like if you want to understand the nature of water in an ocean, if you analyze one drop of water, you understand. Because the ocean is qualitatively one with that one drop of water. Similarly, to understand the quality of the Supreme Being, if you analyze the nature of the soul, that is enough. So this is one way of Vedic analysis, and Krishna is following this way of Vedic analysis here. That first he is going to explain about the nature of the soul, and from that you should be able to understand his nature. Just as the soul is not material, the soul cannot be cut into pieces, the soul cannot be burned by fire, you should understand that the Supreme Soul, Super Soul, cannot be cut into pieces, cannot be burned by fire. We should understand that. That much we should understand. See, Krishna spends 20 shlokas on the Jivatma. That the Jivatma is inconceivable. Jivatma cannot be cut. Jivatma cannot be wetted by water and all that. So many things he says. Now for Paramatma, he doesn't speak all these things. Why? Because he expects that we use our intelligence. Jivatma is part and parcel of Paramatma. So qualitatively one. So whatever you cannot do to Jivatma, you cannot do to Paramatma also. So therefore he, you know, it's not that 20 shlokas he speaks on Jivatma, another 20 shlokas he speaks on Paramatma. Paramatma also cannot be cut. Paramatma cannot be wetted. Paramatma cannot be burned. He doesn't speak all that. It's understood. You understand the nature of the Supreme by thorough study of oneself. But you should understand that we are part, he is the whole. So we are infinitesimal, he is infinite. That difference we should always remember. Other than that, qualitatively we are what? Quantitatively we are different. In the Vedanta Sutras as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Supreme has been accepted as the origin of all emanations. Such emanations are experienced by superior and inferior natural sequences. This statement requires some explanation, but I'll refrain from it. There's not enough time. The living entities belong to the superior nature as it will be revealed in the 7th chapter. Although there is no difference between the energy and the energetic is accepted as the supreme and the energy or nature is accepted as a subordinate. The living entities therefore are always subordinate to the Supreme Lord, as in the case of the master and the servant or the teacher and the taught. Such clear knowledge is impossible to understand under the spell of ignorance.
And to drive away such ignorance, the Lord teaches the Bhagavad Gita for the enlightenment of all living entities for all time. Okay, now I'll... any questions? Otherwise I'll explain a few points from Gita Gan. Okay, in Gita Gan, this is... I'll point out the parallels regarding text 11. Ashochanam Ashochastam. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Prabhupada writes, Pragyava Ashocha Bishaye Sho Korotumi Bir Pragyabad Hashokar Jena Kona Dhir. You're speaking as if you're some intelligent commentator. You're speaking so much about Dharma. Pandit Je John Hoy Shokna Hita Mritadeha Nitta Sejane Vichar. A learned person does not lament for these things. And he deliberates. He is aware of the deliberation that the body is dead and the soul is eternal. Then, regarding today's verse, Dehinosmin Yatha Dehi, Prabhupada writes, actually even regarding the previous verse, Natveva Aham Jatunasam, he is saying, Purve era nahi chilo pore na thakibe murkher bichare nischoy janibe. It is, you know, the fools, they think that previously we did not exist, they did not exist, and in the future they will not exist. This is the deliberation of foolish people. You should know this for sure. Deha dehi bhed dui nitta nitta sei kaumar jauvan jara parivartan jai. Dehe sokarja hoy dehi nitta rahe tatha dehantara prapti panditera kahe. The difference between the deha and the dehi. Dehi. Dehi means the owner of the body. The owner of the body is the soul. The one who, the possessor of the body. There's a difference between the deha and the dehi. And the difference is the deha is anitya. Dehi is nitya. And just as there is the transformation of the body from childhood to boyhood to old age, similarly, the soul attains another body. It attains another body. Shita Ushna Sukha Dukkha Indriya Vikar. Indriyar Das Jara Tahe Adhikar. Those who are servants of the senses, they experience the various transformations of the senses in the form of heat, cold, happiness, distress. Jesav Anitta Vastu Asi Chali Jaya Sohishnuta Matra Gon Tahar Upaya. That these are all temporary experiences. They come and go. The only way we can get out of this is by cultivating the quality of sahishnuta, tolerance. Batha nahi de jare anitto isa se jan bujhilo jano purushartha vaibhav. The opulence of liberation, the highest purushartha, the highest goal of human endeavor. That can be understood. That a man understands that when these impermanent experiences don't give that man any pain. Samadukha sukadhir anitta vyapare amaratva sepai jitiya samsare. That such a dhir, a sober person, is equal to distress and happiness within this temporary world. And he attains eternity, having conquered over material existence. Asat sharire satta nahi tar, nitya satta jeev hoy mrityu nahi jar. This body is asat. Asat means it does not have any existence. Whereas the jeev, it is nitya satya. It is eternally true. And it does not have any death. Ubhay vichar kori korilo nishchit. Tattvadarshi sei kahe jai hoy hit. And the Tattvadarshis, those who see reality,
seers of the truth, that means the liberated souls, they speak that which is beneficial for all. They have concluded this after sufficient deliberation. Very nice book. If you learn Bengali, you should read Gita Argan. Very, very nice book. Very beautiful book. Okay, Vishnu Chakravarti comments very nicely. Bhaktivinoda is... Okay, here is a statement by Bhaktivinoda, nice statement on Dehinosmin, text 13. Jemon deho dharan koriya ei dehe kramannaye kaumar jovan o jaragrasto hoite hoy athacha dehi rastitta thake temoni dehantar hoileyo dehi rastitter lop hoy na. Just as while the body transforms from childhood to youth to old age, the owner of the body is existing. The owner of the body does not cease to exist while the body is transforming from childhood to youth to old age. Similarly, when there is transference to another body also, the owner of the body continues to exist. It does not cease to exist. And just as when one moves from childhood to youthhood, one attains delight and happiness. Similarly, when one moves from old age to a new body, for the souls who are devotees of God, there is utkarsha, there is happiness. There is an exalted position here. There is achievement of an exalted position, and there is happiness, delight, harsha. So therefore, intelligent people, they don't lament when the body is dead. That was Rasikranjan. Chakravarti, he is continuing from his, if you remember his previous explanation, that he is a Bhagavatam commentator. And he is talking in terms of the object of love. Nano cha atma sambandhena dehopi prityaspadam syat. Arjuna is anticipating that Krishna might be thinking that because previously it was deliberated that the soul is the greatest object of one's affection. So now Arjuna is anticipating that Krishna might be, Krishna is anticipating that Arjuna might be thinking that in connection with the soul, the body also becomes an object of affection. It's like I like my son, I like his body also. Deha sambandena putra bhratradayopi, and in connection with from his body to somebody else's body, then others such as sons, brothers, they also become objects of affection. I am most affectionate towards myself. Then I become affectionate to my body, which is connected to my soul. Then there are other people who are connected to my body. There are other bodies connected to my body, my son, my brothers, my sisters. So then they also become objects of my affection. Tat sambandhena naptradayopi. And there are other bodies which are connected to their bodies. So I also become affectionate to my grandson, because my grandson's body is connected to my son's body, which is connected to my body, which is connected to me. So they also become objects of affection. Atas tesham nashe shokaha syadeva. So Arjuna might be thinking that so when you kill them, because now Arjuna has to face his people who are on the platform of his sons. His son is also on the war field. He's also going to die most probably. Similarly, you may have other grandsons. All these people are going to die. They're all related in some way. So he's saying that Arjuna might be thinking, so but when they die, when their bodies die, then definitely there will be lamentation. Iti chet atah aha. If Arjuna were to think like this, then in response to that, in anticipation to that, Krishna speaks this shloka. Dehi no smin yatha dehe.
dehinaha jivasya asmin dehe kaumaram kaumara praptihi bhavati. In this body, the living entity attains the status of childhood. Tataha kaumara nashanantaram yauvana praptihi. Then, after that status of childhood is destroyed, then he attains youth. Yauvana nashanantaram jara praptihi yatha tatha eva dehantara praptihi iti. And just as after youth is destroyed, one attains old age, and after old age is destroyed, one similarly attains another body. This is the cycle. Tatascha atma sambandhinam kaumaradinam prityaspadanam nashe yatha shokaha na kriyate. So similarly, so just as this status of child, being a child, being a youth, they are all objects of our affection. And when childhood is destroyed and you come to youth, you don't lament for that. Rather, you are happy. Tatha dehasya api atma sambandhina prityaspadasya nashe shokaha na kartavya. Similarly, when the body is destroyed and you are transferred, the soul is transferred to another body, then you should not lament for that. That is the point. Because these statuses of the body, when they are destroyed, you should not lament over them. Within one body, you don't lament when the status changes from one to another. So when the soul is transferred to another body, you should understand that is another material status, that's all. Yauvanasya nashe jara praptau shokaha jayate iti che. But if you say, no, when the youth is destroyed, when the status of youth is destroyed, and you attain the status of old age, then lamentation will arise. Everybody laments when people become old and disabled. So how can you speak like this? If Arjuna had to think like that, then he explains, kaumarasya nashe yauvana praptau harshopi jayate. But I reply that when the status of childhood is destroyed and the status of youth is attained, then you have delight which arises. So it is not that it is only miserable. Sometimes it is happy, sometimes it is unhappy. Ataha bhishma dronadinam jirna dehanashe khalu navya dehantara praptau tarhi harshah kriyatam. Therefore, that argument does not stand. You cannot say that it is only miserable. It is sometimes happy. And in this situation, Bhishma and Drona, when they are going to give up their worn out old bodies and they are going to attain new bodies, then you should in fact be happy. They are going to attain new bodies now. He writes a little bit more. Okay, then the next comment is about Matra Sparsha, which is very important. Makes a very important remark here. Both he and Baladeva Vidyabhushan have written very nicely on these points. No, satyameva tattvam. Now Arjuna might be thinking, all right, that is true. Tadapi avivekinaham mama manaha eva anarthakari vrthaiva shokamoha vyaptam dukhayati iti. But still, my mind, the mind of my unintelligent person, it always brings about some disaster, and unnecessarily it gives me misery and fills me with lamentation and delusion. Tatra na kevalam ekam mana eva apitu manasaha vrtayaha api sarva stvaggadi indriya rupaha svavishayan anubhavya anartha karmiha ityaha. So Krishna then responds by thinking that no, it's not just the mind. It's not just the mind. The extensions of your mind in the form of the senses, they cause you to experience sense objects and they bring about disaster. See, this idea has to be understood. This will come up repeatedly. See, this idea of sense objects, vishaya. In Vedic civilization, we refer to sense objects as vishayas. Vishaya is not actually a gross object. This is not a vishaya. A vishaya means the object of the senses. You see, even in a dream,
touch, see, taste, smell, you see various objects. These are the sense objects. These are the Vishayas. Vishayas refer to those which you see, touch, taste. Those which have sound, touch, form, taste, smell. These are called Vishayas, sense objects. These are actually subtle. And the senses are also subtle. In a dream, you're walking. You have legs. You see inside a dream. Your gross eye is closed. But your subtle eyes are open and you're seeing. So when we generally talk about the senses, like here Chakravarti is explaining, the senses are the extensions of the mind. The mind is subtle. And the senses refer to the senses of the subtle body. And the sense objects are what are perceived by the subtle body. Now in the gross world also, the mind, through the subtle senses, through the gross body, through the gross senses, perceive the subtle sense elements, sound, touch, form, taste, smell, the sense objects, within this world of gross matter. So here also I see color, I see yellow, I see green. These are called qualia. In modern cognitive psychology, they refer to this as qualia. They are also confused what it is. They also can't understand what is a dream. They are unclear. And in Western philosophy also, they are somewhat unclear about these things. They are vague. But in our Vedic tradition, Vaishnava tradition, we are not unclear. So the extension of the mind is the subtle body and the subtle senses, and through the gross body they operate and they cause us to experience sense objects. They cause us to experience sense objects, and by causing us to experience sense objects, they create a lot of trouble. Ityaha matra iti. He speaks the words beginning matra. Matra Indriya Grahya Vishayas Tesham Sparshaha Anubhavaha. Matra refers to sense objects which are grasped by the subtle senses. Tesham Sparshaha Anubhavaha. Sparsha means touch. So the touch of the sense objects means sense experiences. Experience of sense objects. Shitoshneti Agama Payana Iti. He says that, look at the shloka, then you will understand what he is talking about. Shitoshna sukadukhadaha. Shita means cold, here winter. Ushna means heat, here summer. Sukha, happiness. Dukha, pain. Agama apayana. Agama means appearing. Apayana means disappearing. So these sense objects, this experience of sense objects, they are like this. They sometimes they come, sometimes they go. Yaddeva shitala jaladikam ushnakale sukhadam. That very cold water which is giving you happiness in the hot season, that very same cold water, tadeva shitakale dukhadam. In the cold season, that very same water is going to give you misery. Ataha anyatatva Agama payitvacha tan vishayanu bhavan titikshasva sahasva. And there is no regularity here. It is not that this water is always going to make you happy. It is going to make you happy under some circumstance. It is going to make you unhappy under certain circumstance. Similarly, it is not that my child is always going to make me happy. Sometimes it will make me happy, sometimes it will make me unhappy. It is not that this food will always make me happy. There is no regularity there. So there is no regularity in the contact of the senses with the sense objects. Under various circumstances, they give you happiness or unhappiness. The very same contact. It is not a different contact. For instance, suppose you have your private well at home. It is your well, your water. Same water. In hot season makes you happy, cold season makes you unhappy. Similarly, it is the combination of men and women. Same man, same woman, under certain circumstances makes us happy, under certain circumstances makes us unhappy. Similarly, it is with all forms of sense-object relationships, all forms of sensory experiences. So therefore, and the other thing is, it comes and goes. It comes and goes. Sometimes you experience happiness, but that happiness is not forever. It goes away. Sometimes you have distress, the distress comes and goes. Both the happiness and the unhappiness are temporary. The experiences are temporary, the happiness and distress are also temporary. And therefore, he is saying, Tan Vishayanu Bhavan Titikshasva. Tolerate these sensory experiences. Tesham Sahanameva Shastra Vihito Dharmaha. The Shastras prescribe that it is dharma to tolerate these sense objects. Nahi maghe masi jalasya dukkha dattva buddhyaiva shastre vihitah snana ropo dharmastyajyate. Indeed, in the month of Magh, one should not, one does not give up dharma, the dharma of taking bath in water. When the water gives you misery, you don't think because it's giving me misery, I should give up taking bath. No religious man will think like that. Dharma eva kale sarvanarthan nivartako bhavati. Dharma itself will take you out of all the anarthas, all the problems. Evam eva ye putra bhratradya utpatti kale dharma dyuparjana kale cha sukhadaha. Teva mrityukale dukhadaha agamapayenaha anityaha tanapi titikshasva. Similarly, when you have a son, when you have a brother, etc., when they are born, you become very happy. When they bring you money, you become very happy. And when they die, you become very unhappy. Because these experiences come and go, they are non-eternal. So you should tolerate those experiences also. Natu tad anurodhena yudhurupa shastravita svadharmastyajyaha. Not that just because you are disturbed by the happiness and distress, you give up your scripturally ordained swadharma in the form of dharma, in the form of yuddha, war. Viheta dharma anacharanam khalu kale mahanartakrad itibhava. If you give up doing activities which are prescribed dharma, then at a later point in time, they will lead to great disaster. Okay, I don't have time to continue further now, but we'll deal with this tomorrow. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.